Good evening, everyone. I'm Danielle Woods, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking some time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Nikhil Sabal will discuss deed fraud, and we'll take your calls live. Senator Sabal will be joined by James Leonard, who is the Commissioner of Records with the City of Philadelphia. Together, they will discuss what steps you can take to protect yourself from deed fraud and what to do if you think you're being targeted by scammers. Together, they will answer your questions and offer resources. As a reminder, at any time, if you have a question and would like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, that is star 3 on your keypad to participate. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Nikhil Sabal. Hi, Senator.
Hi. Thank you so much, Danielle. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our telephone town hall. I'm Nikhil Sabal, and it's my honor to represent the people, communities, and lands of the 1st Senatorial District. Our district runs from Kensington and Port Richmond in the Northeast down through Fishtown, Northern Liberties, Old City, Chinatown, Center City, Graduate Hospital, all of South Philadelphia east of Broad, and all the way down to Eastwick and the airport. I'm so excited to welcome friends and neighbors throughout the 1st Senatorial District to this telephone town hall. And I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedule to participate on tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I really appreciate your engagement. So once again, if you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, press star 3 on your phone. As Danielle said, tonight we'll be discussing deed fraud. For those who may not be aware, deed fraud occurs when a person sells a home by pretending to be the legal owner without actually having the owner's permission. The legal owner's name is removed from the deed without their knowledge or informed consent. This is becoming a serious issue in our city, and it robs people not only of their property, but their safety and stability. Our homes are how we build and preserve intergenerational wealth. Our homes can offer us spaces of safety and security. Our homes are where we base our lives, and deed fraud can swiftly undermine all of that for a family. To help navigate this complex issue, it's my pleasure to introduce our guest this evening, James Leonard, who is the Commissioner of Records for the City of Philadelphia. Jim is a lifelong resident of Philadelphia who has spent almost his entire career in public service on behalf of Philadelphians. Jim has served as the Commissioner of the City of Philadelphia Department of Records since his appointment in April 2016. As Commissioner, Jim serves as the Recorder of Deeds for Philadelphia, manages the city's records management program for all departments, and administers the department's public access to records program, including the city's historical archives. Before his appointment as Commissioner of Records, Jim practiced law in Pennsylvania for approximately 17 years, most of that time with the City of Philadelphia Law Department. So, Jim, welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for being here.
Senator, thank you for the invitation, and good evening, everybody.
Good evening. So, you know, before we get started, I want to see if you might want to just overview what the Records Department does and then what, you know, what deed fraud is for a layperson.
Absolutely. Thank you. The Department of Records, as you mentioned, is responsible for, as a general matter, for the records management function on behalf of all city departments, its boards, commissions, and other offices that make up our city government. And we regularly assist all of our departments with that function. But we also, just as importantly, have several public-facing record-keeping functions, which involve, require us to provide many services to the public, which allow them to us to maintain and to provide access to them of a variety of different public records. One of the most important functions that we serve, as you mentioned, Senator, is we serve as the Recorder of Deeds for the City of Philadelphia. Every county in our state, and pretty much every county in every state in the country, has a Recorder of Deeds. And we are responsible for maintaining the real estate records for all of the city's over 500,000 parcels of property. So for all of you who own homes, for example, your deeds are almost certainly recorded we call that, are publicly filed in our office, and we maintain, and that's how we maintain proof of ownership, not only for current owners, but the history of that ownership going all the way back to the late 17th century, basically the time of William Penn. And we can talk a little bit as we go along about the different aspects of the services we provide as a recorder of deeds. But as you mentioned, and particularly this evening, we want to talk about deed fraud or property theft, a little bit more about what it is, and then especially the tools that we have and resources that we have available to you all to help prevent it, or if you become, hopefully not a victim, potentially a deed fraud, the resources that we have available to help provide you with assistance to rectify any potential fraud.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jim. As we wait for questions to come in, I wonder if you can just, we've gotten a lot of calls about the fraud in our office. So can you, and that was sort of the impetus for this event. Can you explain what defraud is and then talk about the department's program to protect homeowners from defraud?
Absolutely, Senator. So as you described at the outset, defraud occurs when a fraudster, as we call them, impersonates the current owner of a piece of property and fraudulently draws up and signs a deed in the owner's name, transferring the property to someone else. And most frequently we see this occur where there are vacant properties, like very, very often where owners are deceased. We have a lot of properties like that in Philadelphia, and those can become targets for thieves who research and recognize that, let's say, mom and dad are deceased. They have a long, they see that there's the property has been vacant for quite some time, and the fraudster draws up a phony deed in mom and dad's names, forges their names, and then attempts to record the deed in our office and make it a matter of sort of official public record that the ownership has changed. I should also add that every deed or document that's recorded in our office must be notarized by a notary, a licensed notary public. Now, sometimes you might say, well, how could a notary public notarize a document when the people are deceased? That happens in a few ways. Sometimes the notary could be part of the fraud and goes along with it. But more often than not, a real notary is also victimized, and their identity and what is called their notary stamp, which is on every document they notarize, is also stolen, so that the thief forges the names of the owners and then forges the name and stamp of typically a real licensed notary. So that when the document is presented to our team for recording, it is extraordinarily difficult to tell that it is a forgery, because everything on its face looks legitimate. You have the signatures of in theory of the owners, even though they're not real, but you also, more importantly, have a real licensed notary's signature and stamp on it. And that is a way that those that can then get through, and if they're recorded, the ownership of the property will change. And that starts a long, painful process for the victims once it's discovered, that a legal process, that is, to return the property to their rightful name and ownership. And as you said, Senator, these are folks' homes, family homes, most typically. It's the means which most of us, me included, are holding our generational wealth. So these are incredibly personal crimes that strike at the heart of who we are and where we live and where we raise our families. And, you know, I would say about a few years before COVID, there was an uptick in deed fraud reporting. We take deed fraud reports in our office, and that's one of the tools we use to help people we'll talk about. And we noticed that, and others in our community and our service partners in the legal community and elsewhere noticed, and we all got together and we created a task force with our local Philadelphia Bar Association that still meets and is made up of many partners. And we've worked over the past several years to come up with ideas to reform legal issues related to potential deed frauds, and as well in our office to create some common sense tools and resources that we think can be helpful to people.
Thanks, Jim. I wanted to check before we move on. Danielle, do we have any questions ready?
We sure do, Senator. Let's go to Mary from Pennsport. Mary, you are live with the Senator.
Hi. In real estate, I sell real estate, and we're having problems getting like deeds recorded for properties. It's been like some properties are listing between 6 and 8 months, and a deed still hasn't been recorded. And I was wondering why it's taking so long.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for that question. I think that's strange to me because we record same day, essentially. We record all of our deeds typically at this point within one day. I'm not sure. I think I'd like you to separately, so we can look into it a little more, separately email us at, and I think Senator's staff can share contact information, but our email address is recordsinfo@phila.gov. It was the case in the midst of the pandemic, and especially in 2021, we had a very large, because of how voluminous or how rapidly the real estate market and hot it had gotten, how rapidly it had expanded and how hot it got during COVID, combined with, you know, our sort of internal attrition, staff attrition and staffing issues that were COVID-related, unfortunately, like many of us experienced. But that led to, long story short, to a big backlog. But that backlog was eliminated quite some time ago, well over a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and we've been back recording at our goal rate of within one day of submission of a valid document. So, I'd like you to email us with, if you could, with some more information on that so we could look into the details.
And Mary, this is Nikhil Saval. If you want to reach out to us as well, we'd be glad to kind of, you know, help, you know, just for this and also for anything else. You can reach out to us at 267-668-3550 or email us at Saval, S-A-V-A-L, at pasenate.com or stop by our South Philly office here in Pennsport, our South Philly office at 110709 South 6th Street. That's basically 6th and Washington. Thanks so much for the question. Danielle, I think we have some more questions lined up. I'd love to take one if you've got one.
Yes, of course. But a reminder, before we get to this next question, if you have a question, you're on the line, just joining us, please press *3 to ask your question. Again, that number, *3 to participate in our conversation tonight. Let's go now to Nico. Nico, you are live with Senator Saval and his guest.
I'm just really curious. You know, I understand and I can appreciate that, you know, we're recognizing more and more the importance of this issue. And I'm curious, you know, noting that financial burden that it creates to reclaim one's own property, what initiatives are being taken and protections being either developed or proposed to help shield families from those burdens when this stuff happens? Because I'm also learning more as a mortgage servicer and soon to be real estate agent about, in my personal work, this type of thing happening, increasingly and more viciously than ever, usually the people who have the least means by which to protect themselves.
Yeah, thank you for that, Nico. And you are correct. This is has been a problem in Philadelphia for a number of years, but it's also, if you read national media, it is more common elsewhere in other parts of the country. I've talked with many reporters just a few months ago from throughout different parts of the country where this was not an issue in their jurisdictions or in their states. 5 years ago, as much as it is now. So it's a growing issue, and there's a lot more attention to it. What we've done, a few things, and I'm glad you asked, is we, first of all, we have a dedicated website with resources in more detail than what I'm talking about tonight. If you go to our, and I think the Senator's staff can share that, but if you go to the records, Philadelphia Records Department website at phila.gov, you will find a service button on there for that contains material for deed and mortgage fraud. One of the tool that we had created with the help of one of our partners a few years ago is a tool called, and that other jurisdictions use as well, is a tool called Fraud Guard. Anybody can sign up for Fraud Guard. It's sort of like think of a credit alert, email alert service where you can find out if your credit score changes and you get an email if it does, and then you can go check it. By signing up for Fraud Guard, which is at no cost, you will receive email alerts if a document is recorded in our office, in the Recorder of Deeds office, with your name on it. So for many years, we've sent out and continue to send out paper letters to people indicating that. But this is a faster service. It also, if you don't live at the home that's affected, you won't necessarily see the letter in a timely manner if you're not getting the mail as regularly. So you can get this email. It will tell you within 30 days of the document being recorded that it's on record, and you'll be able to click on a link and see it and see whether it's something that you know about or whether it's something that's potentially fraudulent. Now, that doesn't necessarily prevent, at that point, the document's been recorded, so the fraud has occurred. But what this does is it reduces drastically the amount of time in between when the fraud occurs and when a victim discovers it. Because we've seen in many instances, years go by, especially if folks don't live there. So perhaps, like I said, mom and dad are deceased. It remains in their names, but vacant. The children or the heirs don't live there, go there maybe infrequently. And we have had cases where they don't find out for years that the property has been stolen. The longer the time is between a fraud occurring and it being discovered can vastly increase or almost certainly increases the complexity and the cost of getting the property back. And so that's one of the tools that we have out there. If anybody believes they're potentially a victim of deed fraud or knows somebody who potentially is, we encourage them, and all this information is on our website, to contact us immediately, to file with us a deed fraud report, and then we will interview you and get as much information as you can, and then direct people to our DA's office, to the police department, and then refer them to legal services if they can qualify, or refer them to the Philadelphia Bar Association if they have to hire a lawyer. Because anybody who is potentially a victim of this needs legal help. This is not something that, if it occurs, can be navigated at all easily by a layperson.
Thanks, Jim. So, one key point there is just that the tools that you offer have a way of dramatically shortening the time that a fraudulent case is reported. There's another set of steps you'd have to go through legally and the like. But I mean, it's just it's, you know, it's, I'm sure that there are a number of people in our city who have had the experience of a property where a fraud has occurred, but that has not been, you know, the amount of time has passed such that it makes it immensely difficult to recover that property. I just again remind everyone. So this is, again, we're talking here, with Jim Leonard, from the Commissioner of Deeds, the Commissioner of Records about deed fraud and about his department. We're still taking questions, from friends and neighbors. Please press *3 on your phone keypad. If you have a question, Danielle, do we have another question?
Yes, let's go to Gerald in South Philadelphia. Gerald, you are live with the Senator.
Hi, Senator.
Hi, Gerald.
Wouldn't this problem be less if people were required to go through title companies where they would exercise more due diligence as to who the buyer and the seller would be? I mean, you could even have people give fingerprints so that, you know, there's no question as to who conducted the transaction if it's that widespread.
Jim, do you want to take that? What do you think of the Gerald's question about that?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gerald. Most people, thankfully, most transactions, real estate recording transactions, are done through title companies. I would say probably about 90% of them are done, and we record probably about 190,000 documents in total, that's deeds, mortgages, and other miscellaneous things a year. It's a very large volume. About 90% of those, I would say, are done through either title companies or through other professional support. And so that's the good thing, because one of our big recommendations that I hadn't made yet, but I'm glad you brought it up, is to tell people to always use a title company and always get title insurance, which is what a title company does. They check to make sure that there's legitimate ownership of the property that's being transferred, and then they insure the transaction so that if there is fraud somewhere down along the line, there's an insurance company that can be looked back to, and the victim is not necessarily then just hanging out on their own. The issue in Philadelphia and in some other large cities, like Detroit, or which is Wayne County, Michigan, New York City, Baltimore, some of the older cities in the Northeast, is there's not small, you know, in our city it's probably between 8% and 10% group of transactions where folks are, and it might be more about 5% or 7% in Philly, but about that amount of transactions where folks are doing them what I call DIY. So they're doing them on their own. These are frequently folks who are doing transfers between or among family members, and they have limited means and limited ability to hire, let's say, an attorney or go to a title, where they might not know to go to a title company or to a real estate agent. And they do this on their own, and that can increase the potential for fraud. Now, we have thought through to require people to go through a title company would require changes to state law. Right now, you don't have to have title insurance. You'd have to work through how people were going to be able to afford to pay. Because as somebody mentioned in one of the other callers, the folks who are most, or maybe it was you, Gerald, but the folks who are most often victims of it, the folks who can least afford the long road and cost to rectify the fraud. So when you require title insurance or go through a title company, there becomes a larger cost issue that also would have to be dealt with.
Thanks, Jim. So, and that's pretty interesting. So it's as a recommendation, you recommend going for a title company and using title insurance. But this is an equity issue, it sounds like, that there's a, you know, this increases the cost of the transaction. At the same, I mean, it seems like a real problem, right? You know, that people who tend to get caught up in deed fraud maybe can or think that they can't afford insurance, and then, you know, can least afford the consequences of deed fraud. It's interesting. I'd be interested. Well, we can get into this a little bit later, but I'm interested to talk about what the other states have done things differently to protect homeowners. But before we do that, I want to get to our next question. Danielle, do we have another question from the group?
Yes. Let's go to Helen from Packer Park. Helen, you are live.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. I just don't understand when a deed is filed, I guess. If I currently have a mortgage on my house and I'm still paying, do I have to worry about this deed fraud situation?
Hi, Alan. Deed fraud can happen to anybody. It's more likely or more common to occur. We haven't really seen any. I mean, it's not common for a thief to target a house where they know the people live there. Because the idea with these folks is almost always to find a vacant home that's been vacant for a while that they can try to steal, and then they flip it. So the thief, it wants to be a ghost. They don't want to be seen or known, obviously. And they don't want, if they even take the ownership in their own name, they might take it in a fake name. They might have a third party who's involved take it. But they don't want it. They want it flipped for cash as fast as possible. I mean, and we've mapped over the last, we've taken deed fraud reports in our office for, you know, probably a dozen years at this point or more. And we mapped where all those reports have come from, and you see that they most likely, it affects disproportionately communities of color throughout the city, and in particular, what we'd all notice were gentrifying neighborhoods. So these folks are opportunists. They see prices going up in neighborhoods. They see vacant homes, and they go after those. They're less likely to go after, although they could, a home where the people live there. But what we tell everybody is sign up for Fraud Guard. But then also, you know, if you don't live at the home, visit the home regularly if you can. If you live nearby, if you live in the city, go there once a week. Go there every few weeks. Pick up the mail. Read the mail, because when property ownership changes, other things start to change. Your tax bill, the name on the tax bill changes. The name on your water bill will change. So if you're picking up the mail, for example, you'll see that within a few months there will be a different name on the water bill. But we've seen people, as I said, where if they're not living at the home and they haven't been there for over a year to pick up mail, they don't necessarily see that. And then for any homeowner, we always tell them, and as I've alluded to, is to never sell property. Do not transfer property on your own. We see people do it all the time. This is a very technical sort of legal process that people, that deed is, preparation of the deed, the recording of the deed. It's very technical. It can be confusing. And it's easy to make a mistake, so that when people are transferring, as we see, properties between mostly family members on their own, it's easy to make mistakes, and that makes it doing it on your own without title companies or without realtors or without an attorney helping you can make it more likely to be a target potentially for fraud. But for current homeowners, you should, if you live in their home, I would encourage you to sign up for Fraud Guard.
Thanks, Jim. Just again, a reminder, press star 3. We're taking your questions tonight for Jim Leonard. This is Nikhil Sval, State Senator for the 1st District, and we're in conversation with Jim Leonard with the Department of Records. And Danielle, let's go to our next call.
Okay, let's go to Jason in Fishtown. Jason, you are live.
Yes, hi. I'm just kind of curious why there isn't a more secure like website or something you guys can go to when transferring the deed. If it's just as simple as somebody getting somebody's notary, it just seems awful convenient for them. I just wish there was more security in place.
Thanks, Jason. Those are very good points. About 90% of deeds are filed through an electronic system that we have. And as I mentioned before, all those pretty much are done by that electronic system is used exclusively. It's not used by individuals. It's used by businesses, mainly by what we call e-recording companies. And those are the companies that title companies, title insurance companies hire to record their documents. We don't see much fraud at all in that world, in the world of electronic recording. We've seen some, but most of it we've seen come through over the counter or like sort of people walking into the office to record the documents. That's where historically and still currently we see most of that fraud occur. The notary, as you mentioned, the notary, for example, it is, you know, no offense to, and there's probably notaries on this call. So the reality is that state laws govern in Pennsylvania, governs what notaries have to do to notarize the document. And they, you know, it's not like a modern, like how to say this. I mean, it's just not a modern process. It's sort of like a signature, the notary signs, and they have a little ink. Whoever's a notary on here, I'm sure, knows it. It has a little ink stamp that they buy. And the fact is that stamp can be, you know, anybody can forge a name. You can figure out a notary. You can go on the state notary website and find out who a notary is because it's public record. But people can go and basically get dupes of, you know, potentially of a stamp. So that there is not, and one of my, I think long-term, one of the keys would be to rethink, but this has to be done at the state level and requires probably, and requires certainly funding, but to rethink making the notary process more secure, if for nothing else than for at least real estate documents, and to somehow create, because the notary is essentially authenticating and saying to us when we look at it, this person who is selling the property signed this deed. They sat in front of me, I checked to make sure it was them, and I'm signing as a notary and telling you that was the case. But there's no, and there isn't in most states, there's no electronic, let's say, authentication system for notaries to be able to verify or for us to be able to verify that the notary is legit or the notary stamp is legit. So I think that's a good point, and it's just not a modern, it wasn't built for sort of a modern era like I think we find ourselves in.
Thanks so much, Jason, for the question. Jim, do you know of other states where the notary process is more secure? They've tried to modernize the things you're talking about?
I haven't seen it yet. We stay in contact with the National Property Recorders Association. I was just at one of their conferences a few months ago, and I always sort of go around and find out. I ask all these sorts of questions that you all are asking, but I haven't seen that any that have modernized the notary process. I sort of bring it up all the time. I mean, it's not a small, it wouldn't be a small project. I mean, it, like I said, it would require a change in state law. And then I think probably the building of a new electronic authentication system that notaries could use.
Yeah. I can see how that would be a significant process. But, you know, if that seems like, along with a few other things, if that's one of the ways to make this whole process secure, could be interesting.
Well,
I agree.
Let's put it this way. If we were able to, if there was some sort of, if notaries were required when they signed a deed to use some sort of a state-authorized or mandated electronic authentication system, and then we, when we got that deed, were able at the counter to check to ensure that that was an authenticated notary transaction that's verified under a sort of validated under a state, you know, system, then I think that would go a long way to eliminating fraud.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's definitely worth exploring. We have a bunch of questions I think coming in. So I want to make sure we can get to as many as we can. Danielle, who's our next caller?
We're going to go to Loretta, Bella Vista. Loretta, you are live with the senator and his guest.
Oh, hi, thank you.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi. I had a question about the, safeguard it's called? The fraud guard. If it's your own home, you can sign up for it. But if your parents are deceased and the house is still in their name, then you can't sign up for it. Can it work for that?
Question, Loretta, you can do that. I always tell people, so I'm glad you brought this up. If mom and dad are deceased or mom and dad are in, an assisted living facility, so the house is vacant and remains in their name, but you're the adult child who's, caring, and sort of helping them with their affairs, you can sign up for Fraud Guard with your email address, for example, and you would get an email if their names appeared in a document recorded in our office.
Got it. So you can sign up for Fraud Guard on behalf of for your parents, and then you'd get a notification.
Same, but I put my email basically, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And you should know that there are other. You will see from time to time online, or you might get in the mail, offers for paid services like things called Title Lock. Those are essentially what our Fraud Guard is, except they charge you. So I would encourage you, if all those services that somebody's trying to sell you do is email you if a document gets recorded in our office, our service does that for no cost.
Fantastic. Thanks, Loretta, for the question. And thanks, Jim. Let's go, I think, to our next question. Danielle, who do we have up?
Okay, let's go to Peggy in South Philadelphia. Peggy, you are live.
I all the questions I had, I think, were answered by the last two people. I was a realtor in Philadelphia for the past 30 years, and I listened to what you're telling us, and all the safeguards that are taken at the time of settlement for these things not to happen are unbelievable, that this fraud can take place. So am I to understand that none of these properties go through a realtor? Is that correct?
Typically, the properties that have been stolen or where deed fraud's been committed, have not gone through title companies or realtors. No, because that makes it more likely. I mean, if you think about it, it makes it more likely these folks are going to get caught, and it makes them much less anonymous. Now, we have seen, I know of one occasion where, and this is a pretty bold, I think, fraudster, but who did actually use the title company and fooled the title company with false identification and false IDs. But that's not the most common way. The most common way is that they exist sort of outside of the real estate profession sort of network and support network.
Have any of these fraudsters been caught?
Absolutely. So we have a very good partnership, a great partnership, and have for many years with our district attorney's office. They have a unit called the Economic Crimes Unit that we work with regularly and who works with victims. They have, over the past several years, prosecuted and convicted a number of folks who have stolen not just one property but multiple properties. We regularly, as I said, cooperate with them. We share our deed fraud reports that we take from the public with them, and we share information with them and have improved the way we share information with our DA's office and the police department over the past several years. So we've gotten much more collectively creative in how these are investigated and prosecuted. And the police, these cases are complex. This is not, as I said, recording a deed is complicated. It's not sort of a thing that, like I said, for, you know, lay people should be, we would recommend they not do. But the cases themselves can be very complicated. So a few years ago, the DA's office recognized that, and they trained a number of police detectives throughout the city on how to investigate these matters, because the police didn't necessarily, just like a lot of most people don't know how to write a deed, the police didn't necessarily have the expertise or training across the board to investigate these, which can, like I said, are financial crimes and can get pretty complicated. So that changed, and I think that's improved their enforcement efforts.
Thanks, Jen. That's super interesting. I mean, so it just also points to, you know, your work, your department's work across city departments and, you know, working closely with the DA's office and the like, to prosecute some fairly complicated crimes. So I'd love to go to our next question, Danielle. If we've got one lined up.
Yes, let's go to Martin in South Philly. Martin, you're up.
Hello?
Hi, Martin. You're live with us.
All right. Nikal, that's how you pronounce it? Okay.
No, that's right. Yep.
Nikal. Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. Currently, we are in court. I have four sisters. I have two older than me. Then me, I'm 69. And then two younger than me, all adults. And so this happened during the pandemic in 2021. My oldest sister, and my mother's namesake, my mother was 91 at the time, and my mother also was suffering from shingles at the time because I had been taking care of my mother for 19 years, being single, and because I loved my mother, I was going to make sure she stayed in her home, not a home. You know what I mean? And so what wound up happening was that my former sister wound up through undue influence getting my mother, and I had a life estate interest because I'm on a Social Security, I'm on a very fixed income, and so I haven't taken care of my mother for, like I said, 19 years. She wanted to make sure I had a place to stay after she was gone. And then, as long as I could maintain it and either passed away or couldn't maintain it anymore, everyone, our other children, would share in the home, okay? It would be sold. But what her eldest daughter did was wound up convincing my mother and me that I would lose my benefits by having my name on the deed with a life estate interest, and so I'd lose my medical coverage, and I'm somewhat sick, my heart and whatnot. Anyway, that aside, so she convinced me as well as my mother I would lose those benefits, and so led us to believe that we were changing the will that would take me off of the life estate interest, and then everyone would share, okay? And I wouldn't lose my benefits. But what she wound up doing, it was during the pandemic in 2021, was taking it to a lawyer and then putting herself in, unbeknownst to my mother or myself, as power of attorney. And she had the will made up to where she got everything. My mother's life savings, which I made sure was never touched in case something happened to me. I got really sick. That was there for my mother to be taken care of. And the home. And so, as you mentioned before, because that is about people who don't reside at the residence, you know, checking the mail. Well, we lived here. My mother passed away in October 1st, 2022. So what wound up happening was Department of Records sent a letter to her house, and we looked at it, and it said that the deed was changed to her eldest daughter's name. And so I went up because my mother at that age, 91, couldn't get around at my mother's request to go to the Department of Records, and I filed the complaint. And they were very courteous.
Martin?
Oh, no. It seems like we might have lost Martin. I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, Martin, if you're still on the line, I just want to, you know, encourage you to reach out. You know, please get in touch with the department or with our office. You can reach and we can work with the department. Our office, again, is 267-668-3550. That's the number. You can reach out by email at Saval, S-A-V-A-L, at pasenate.com, or visit us at I believe you're in South Philadelphia, Martin, so 110709 South 6th Street, basically 6th and Washington. Sorry to miss the end of that question, but hopefully we can get some help. Let's go to our next question, Danielle. I think we've got a few more that have come in. And I just wanted, before we do that, just want to remind people, if we have a few minutes left for questions, so if you do have questions about deed fraud for Jim Leonard, you can reach out, you can press *3 on your phone to see that. So who do we have next, Danielle?
Okay, it looks like we've got time for a couple more questions. Let's go to Jed in South Philly. Jed, you are live.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Jed. I can hear you. Yep.
Yeah.
This is Nikhil.
Here's what my idea is. That when someone without a title company or, you know, the big procedural real estate transaction, that we should have something which maybe procedurally without legislation could do in-house, which would be to make something called a sale pending and have all the rights of the sale, but to make it easier to reverse for a period of time, and then the city, on their OPA site, could actually list it that way, and that way when they start sending bills and things under another name where you don't get a water bill, then you would have time to look into it if you're not at that property, or even if you are, before it gets more finalized, and then you could more easily resolve the situation.
Thanks, Jed, for the question. Jim, what do you think of that proposal?
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Jed. We've given lots of thought to things like efforts like that, and I think what we've run into, and many recorders in a lot of states do, is that Pennsylvania is what's called known in the legal world for recording as a race to the courthouse state, so that whoever records first, you have to record documents in the order that they come in, because whoever records first in the race has the rights, has superior legal rights. So recorders are not allowed to, if they're presented with a document on its face, that's a validly recorded document. And as I said, most frequently you can't tell that a document is fraudulent on its face. We're required to record it. So we couldn't just, for example, say, well, we know lots of transactions, the potential transactions are coming over the counter could be fraudulent, or a handful of them could be, so we're going to sort of put them in a separate bucket pending. We're not allowed to do that legally as a recorder, because we have to record everything that's in what we call recordable form as it comes in. But I think what you're getting at is trying to figure out a way before it gets recorded, and your thoughts are appreciated, and I think you're thinking about it the right way, is what can we do before it gets recorded to potentially stop it? And, you know, we've given some thought to efforts like that, but it would require also some potentially changes in state law or some other sort of initiative.
Got it. Yeah, and you have a couple of those ideas, I think, through this call on, you know, again, we want to see what makes sense, but on state law, a couple of things around that requiring title insurance, but also, you know, there's an equity issue there, and then, you know, making the notary process more secure. I think we're coming into the end of the conversation, so I want to make sure that we get it's been a really great conversation. I really want to appreciate your time and your expertise and just your service here, Jim. Danielle, do we have a couple questions or a question that we can try to take in this last 2 minutes?
Absolutely. And you know, we got some questions via email, so we want to go to one of those and then see how much time we have left. But this is from Marilyn. Marilyn asks, I get a lot of unsolicited phone calls of people trying to buy my house. Our house is not for sale. What can we do?
Yeah, Jim, have you dealt with? Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, please.
I believe I don't deal with that issue directly, but I believe the city has I believe the city created. I'm just trying to find it. I believe our local city council. Oh yeah, I just found it. We have a do not solicit list. The city does. That was created as a result of it looks like one of our city council ordinances that allows people to add their names to a do not solicit list. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure.
I'm not sure the best way to sort of get that to people, but. Yeah, I might recommend just that we for the email question that we can respond with some of our with our district office or excuse me with our office contact information. We can we can now try to look into it and see if there's a way to connect the constituent to services to help get out of the solicitation. We're happy to look into that.
I'll share, Senator, the website, because I found the website. I'll share it with your team.
Terrific. Yes. Yeah, let's do that. Danielle, who do we have up?
Well, if you would like to take one more question, we'll squeeze one more in, and then we'll let you take it away. Let's go to Terry in Northern Liberties. Terry, you're live.
Hello. I was trying to find out how this, and I've been listening, so I've been hearing a lot of how it happened. So that was my real question. How does it happen that people are able to steal their property? And so I've been hearing, as you said, it's from possibly people that have died or people that aren't visiting their property and just don't know. So I guess, because even with the fraud guard, that's still after the property has been stolen. So I'm trying to think, what are your other options about what people can do to protect themselves?
Thank you for that question, Terry. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the trickiest, the hardest, and I don't have a perfect answer. The hardest thing to do from where we sit is to figure out a way to identify and then create some sort of process and tools to identify and stop the fraud before it actually gets recorded. Like I said, that's often incredibly hard to do because the documents that are turn out to be fraudulent look to everybody who's looking at them when you see them like a real valid document. I think, like I said, considering reforming the way notarize deeds, for example, to create some sort of electronic authentication system could help. There's some other potential ways that we've given thought to that we're probably getting short on time to talk about, but I can, Senator, share my other ideas with you. But, yeah, I mean, that sort of gets to the crux of it, is how do you stop it before it occurs?
Let's maybe just as a closing note, Jim, you want to just give the contact info for your department again, just so everyone has it who needs it.
Yep. So our department is the Department of Records. If you go to our website, the Philadelphia Department of Records website on Phila.gov, you can find a button at the top that says get help with deed or mortgage fraud. You can sign up for Fraud Guard there and find other information about how to file a fraud report or get additional information on resources. But as I mentioned, if you are a victim, if you think you're a victim, you should contact us at recordsinfo@phila.gov or call us 215-686-2290. 215-686-2290. Because we really want to talk to you, over the phone or in person to make sure we get as much information as we can. As you saw from the one caller who we lost a few minutes ago, you saw how complex some of these how these complex these cases can be.
Absolutely, and we so appreciate your time, Jim, tonight, and your time in service and your work at the Department of Records. We appreciate just, you know, all the work and all the time you've taken to answer people's questions. It is a very personal issue. It is a very difficult issue, and you know, it's something that, you know, we people should not be losing their homes, you know, their family homes and the like to fraud of this kind. And so if there's anything we can do to get the information out there and have people protect it is important. So thank you. And I just want to say to thank you to everyone for participating in our telephone town hall discussion, to those who listened in and to those who have questions and gave us suggestions. Just in closing, I want to mention a few additional events that my office is hosting this week. On Friday, October 27th, I'm co-hosting a senior fair at the Holy Name of Jesus Parish at 701 Gall Street. This is going to be from 1 to 3 p.m. again on Friday, October 27th. I'm hosting this alongside Council President Daryl Clark, Congressman Brendan Boyle, State Representative Mary Isaacson, and Council Member Mark Squilla. And on Saturday, October 28th, I'm hosting a free paper shredding and e-recycling event with Council Member Mark Squilla and State Representative Joe Hohenstein. This is going to be from 10 a.m. to noon at Richmond Street and Lehigh Avenue, which is right under I-95. Bring your sensitive documents and old electronics for quick, safe, and confidential disposal. If you didn't have a chance to ask your question about defraud this evening, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. And if you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 267-668-3550 or visit my website, PA Senator Saval, that's PA Senator Saval, SAVAL.com. Thank you again for joining us, and good night, and go Phil. Thank you. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you, Senator. Bye-bye, everybody.